We're still in the book of Numbers, by the way. And we're still in chapter 1. But not really. I brought up
Aleph, Lamed, and Peh. Or the word Aleph, or the word Aleph. All right?
Now, what I'm going to try to do today to explain how many of you, listen to other messianic preachers, evangelists, and on CDs and everything else. All right, now, what's happening, this subject matter I studied many, many years ago, it's not really a huge, giant issue with me at all, but it has to do with controversy within Judaism and the controversy within the Jewish scholars. All right? The only reason why I'm going to try to explain this is not because I want you to believe one way or to believe the other way. The object is that when you begin to hear these tapes or these CDs or these people talking, they're going to be talking about subject matter that perhaps will lose you. And I don't want you to be lost. Does that make sense to you so far? Okay, but the object is just to teach you what the controversy is in Judaism, however, in the Messianic movement, there's an awful lot of scholarly men who are going into the Jewish scholarly work, but with this Jewish scholarly work are not dumb scholars. Get that through my mind. And, you know, no more than I would say Christian scholarly work is dumb people. No, they're intelligent people. They do a lot of research on words and things and statements and everything else in the sun. My object here today is not so much to show you one way or to make you believe one way or the other, but to send to you a presentation which, if you keep on researching Jewish scholarly work, you're going to run into this biggest problem in Jewish scholarly. The book of Numbers has more controversy in it over that one word than any word in the Tanakh. It's that word, Aleph. Now, when we look at this thing, I'll give you some examples. And it's been translated mostly exclusively in most of all the English Bibles as being the number 1,000. Not the number one, but the number 1,000. By myself, I'm not troubled, personally speaking, at all. And once I get this subject matter or this thought in my brain, from this point on, go ahead and read thousands, and I don't care. It doesn't bother me one way or the other. But I think it's important that as you research and find what these people are saying, they're going to challenge you some questioning. It's not a matter whether or not you have to believe one way or the other. The object for me today is to let you know the biggest controversy that is in the book of Numbers over that word. All right? Fair enough? All right. One thing I hope that I can do by the time we are completed with the book of Numbers, because the book of Numbers of and by itself, we could say it has no really significant value to us except, okay, the story of the spies. Well, we all know about that one, right? And, you know, the 40 years in the wilderness and they all died. Okay, we got that. And what else is the book of Numbers all about? Well, it does talk about the holy days again. And it talks about, what else to talk about now? Okay, talks about a little bit took place of Egypt. Again, kind of repetition that took place in Exodus. And so on and so forth. So that's kind of like, you know, that's the book of Numbers. Let's go on to Deuteronomy, right? Well, we could do that. That's quick. But God went out of his way to do something. And he told Moses, I want you to number them. Now, when we come in and we go through, and we're going to talk about a lot of numbers of peoples throughout the book of Numbers, it repeats itself several times, and you're asking yourself, what value is it to me to know the exact number, or what is it that God is doing with the numbers? You understand the difference between the two, isn't it? What is he doing with the numbers compared to what is the exact number? You got me so far? And we need to probably see how does this, why is God having a number? What does that have to do with the 20th century Christian?
Duh.
Do we have an answer?
Duh.
No, we don't, do we? Makes no sense. I don't care how many there were. I just, you know, let's get on the interesting part of numbers and forget about all the names, forget about all the people, forget about, just get on to the subject matter of, the spies. What else do we remember in the book of Numbers? Oh, yeah. There was something about 40 years. Oh, yeah, we got that one down. You know, the book of Numbers is written for a reason. And I'll tell you, sometimes the book of Numbers is not written in chronological order. It's one of the most, all the Torah sections, it's probably the one that's got patches here, patches there, patches here, patches there, patches here, patches there, not in chronological order. And we get toward the end of the book, you're going to find the very same thing that was written in the book of Judges hundreds of years later, as though it existed during the time of Moses. But it didn't. Remember what Daniel explained to you, that God does not go by chronological order. He goes event, 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 a pattern. Oh, now here's another series of event, 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 pattern. When we go to the 26th chapter here, the book of Numbers, guess what? They're counting them again. Didn't chapter 1 enough? Why don't you go to the 26th fourth chapter? Why count them again for? Well, now we have to find out what is the pattern between all of this. The opening chapter 1 of Numbers talks about a certain number of men and names those specific men for a specific reason. They are the, quote, leaders of their tribe. Now, where's the there it is. I want to do something for you, if you can. I said another word, explained another word last week. You remember what I said it was? The word tribe. Remember what I said is the branch? Okay. In Hebrew, that's not a branch from a tree. It's a branch from the vine. I am the vine. You are the branches. So each one of the tribe, the family is one place. But now the branches of the vine come out. And beneath those branches are certain numbers that show up from each one of the tribes. And what does God say in the book of John? It says here that is the father is a husbandman. And he then there prunes whatever branch that is producing so that it will produce more. I hope we'll be able to get to this today and look at the book of Judges for just a few seconds, but not right now. But see, the pattern I find very fascinating here, and I'm not caring about the exact number. I'm asking, why is it, what is he doing with them? What's the purpose thereof? So when you kind of picture, I'm going to make a circular pattern here. I have to do this way because I can't think beyond that point. My brain is not that good. Looks like a what? Looks like a clock, right? Okay, from one of the tribes or branch, something goes out. It goes out, 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 and it goes out. Where do they go out to? Where did God send them? To the land of Canaan. Now, Daniel went through a lot of them. Sometimes they won and sometimes they didn't. Sometimes they obeyed, sometimes they didn't. And sometimes they were pruned really hard, and sometimes down to where there's hardly anybody left. And lo and behold, they still were there. Right? Then God removed them completely out of the area. You understand what I'm saying so far? It's kind of an interesting thing. When we think of the word tribe, it's an ancient word. It means nothing to us today. But it does have a value when we think about it in relationship to why God calls them that branch that comes from the vine. The Messiah is the vine. Now, you say, well, the Messiah wasn't there. No, it's Moses. Moses was the center. Right? He's the one that had to number them. He's the one that had to set up where you live. You live here, you live there, you live here, you live there. He told them exactly where to live. He sent them out. He's like an apostle, in a sense. So let's go on here. Let's go. I'm just going to... You don't have to go as fast as I am. Going to maybe want to take numbers down here, but I want to throw some words out here or some statements out here. In Exodus chapter 12, verse 37, he talks about the children of Israel journeying from Ramses to Sukkot, 600,000 on foot, men besides children, no children allowed. Now, question is, we have to ask the next question: 6,000. Did that include the Levites? Well, in Numbers 11. Page 3 here. Numbers 11. No, they did not. Oh, that's interesting. And what's Numbers 11, verse 21, very fascinating. Moses, now, this is during the time when they were wanting to eat. Right? Remember the time they wanted to eat? God says, I'm going to give you food for a whole solid month. He was mad at him, right? And here, Moses uses the same phrase. Ah, I have given them 3,000 men, or 600,000 men. Why is the number the same? Way back in the 11th chapter of Numbers. But in Numbers 1, it's 3,000 more, 3,000 plus more. No? So you have to ask some questions. This is where Jewish controversy sets in. The numbers don't seem to make sense. Why this number, then that number? Why this number, then that number? How come they don't add it the same way? We know that during the time of the calf, golden calf, how many people died? 3,000 died. Okay, so 3,000 died. So, okay, 6,000 came out of Egypt. Possibility of 600,000 came out of Egypt. You possibility could have an increase of 3,000 plus more kids in that 1 year from birth, okay? That's logical. I mean, they're pregnant women with there coming on along at the same time, you know? And so, you know, you could possibly get, 600,000, you probably bring in 3,000 babies plus. But this was the ones of over the age of 20 and up. It happened in Numbers, the first chapter. So you can see that now the ones who are under 20, now almost the time counting of numbers. In the first year, or second year rather, of the tabernacle, you've got some people finally grew up to 20 years and up. So we get this logical sense, right? Now, so that's just a real simple thing to talk about or explain about. We can come up with logic on this one way or the other to make a difference. Now, let's go to chapter Exodus 20, 38. You don't have to go there. Exodus chapter 38, verse 25. And he talked about the number of the congregation and the number of the talents and 7,725, which is called shackles. Now, in that sense, that makes sense. The word aleph makes sense because we're talking thousands, which is really not very much. Shackles is a very, very lightweight. It has to do with the weight of a talent or weight of something. So you have 1,000 talents, it's not really an awful lot. It may seem like it's a lot, but really not an awful lot. Talents 1/6 or 1/20 of an ounce or something like that. 5% of an ounce, really, really small of our what we call ounce. By the way, cough out ounce, I'm talking about what's called troy ounce. Now, troy ounce is different weight than the ounces you're kind of used to, you know. You put something on your body on a scale and you got up there, that's weight, that's massive weight. Troy ounce has basically to do on the solid mass of any material, metal, gold, silver, copper, lead. Those are weighed differently. They're always constantly perfectly measured out. And we think of ounces, you know, ounces that are liquid ounces, okay? Well, you can't, those are 16 ounces to a pint, and then there's 16 ounces to a pound. But in the troy ounces, it takes 10 ounces to make one troy pound. All right? So when you think about the price of gold, to talk about the troy gold ounce, not the ounce you may think about as you put on your little scale at home, say how many ounces do I eat today? That's a different value than gold or silver or copper or anything else. That's just a minor thing for you to know. But so when you talk about silver or you talk about the shekel, you talk about fun, those make sense when you use the word thousand because it's not really a big amount. Not like tonnage and tonnage and tonnage of things, no matter how much you try to stack them up. Modern day Jewish value, of course, has been greatly inflated since the time of Moses. You know, so you can't compare today's shekel to what it was during Moses' time. Otherwise, you'd have, you know, 6,000 pounds of troy weight. And 6,000 pounds is an awful lot. You think those guys could haul around 6,000 pounds? And we're talking tonnage here. You have to have a pretty good strong horses and an ox to do that. So when you have your comparison, people have their comparison, it's not good to take modern value and place it back then to make common sense to you, because it doesn't make sense at any point in time. Leave it where it was. And it makes sense then. All right? Now in Exodus, I know we're still in Exodus, Exodus, verse 26, we see that there are a number of men, were 600. Where's my marker? 6,300. 550 or 500? 550. All right? That's what we read in Exodus, the 28th chapter. So we already had that number before we get into the book of Numbers, right? They had that value of that number. We're talking thousands here for the fun of it. So you get a picture and a plan. Now what happens is that when you start talking about this, and each one of the tribes coming out with this thousands, the population increases to well over 2.5, maybe 3 million. And that's in Jewish scholarship, that's really difficult to move that mass of people on foot to travel from one side of, quote, Sinai Peninsula to the other side of Sinai Peninsula in 5 days. How fast do the people going to walk? Well, it says on foot, meaning they didn't have, you know, chariots. That means they didn't have wagons, they didn't have chariots. They more than likely would have had some kind of wagon to haul their goods with them, because they're supposed to take everything with them as much as they could. And they did. Right. They had a lot of cattle, they had a lot of sheep, they had a lot of goats, they had an awful lot of those things that they would normally have in their normal life. So we have here now, of course, Numbers, we already talked about that. In the first chapter, 48, there was the same number as you have in Exodus. And then it goes on to something different. I want to go to Numbers 3rd chapter real quickly. Now remember, this is from age. Are you putting that? No way. 20 years and up. Of all the tribes of Israel, except the tribe of Levi. Right? Now we go into here we have the number of Levi, verse 39. The number of Levites of Aaron and word the family and all the males from 1 month old and up was 22,000. Two different series of counting, right? Now, why did God do that? Why would He separate that? Why would He do that for? Do you have any answer?
Well, I thought for all the tribes except Levi, He was counting fighting men that were able to go to war, and the Levites were the priests, and so that would make sense to me.
Okay. Any other answer? No. This, the firstborn comes later, and in the book of Numbers. Entirely different number. And it's very fascinating why it's an entirely different number. But we won't go there today because I'm not talking about the number right now. I'm talking about the counting. It's important to pay attention to the counting. What is He doing with the counting? Now we see to make war, well, okay. 600,000 man army. You know, how many men do we have in Afghanistan today? How many man army? What's the size of the army there? 100,000. That's massive, isn't it? It could do a lot of destruction. 1,000 men could do a lot of destructions. Later on, we'll see that not all of those 6,355 went to war. There was just a handful that God ordered from each tribe to go to war. The rest of them did not. How many of you people do that? Technically, the number that went to war was 12,000. The rest of them didn't. They stayed home. 1,000 reached one of the tribes. That's it. Go to war. That's it. The rest of them, no. They didn't go to war. This is the reason why you can get inflated numbers, including in the book of Judges, looks bigger than it really was. This is a controversy in Judaism. Not a controversy with me. It's not an issue to me one way or the other. I don't care. But I think it's important that when they look at these numbers, they're looking at the point where, okay, out of this XX number of families or tribes, or the tribe out there, this XX number of families, and beneath those families are certain fighting men that could fight. Now, it's fascinating to stop and think about that. All of a sudden, you start counting the ones at a lower number, and they could come to the fighting men by the time they reached the numbers, later on numbers, of 1,000 men for fighting and going to war. The number kept increasing. Now, we talk about another place. This is the argument, if I can call it an argument. We know there are 40 years in the wilderness, right? Now, we'll just use the 600,000 because that's what we start with, right? This is men 20 years and up. We will see later on in the book of Numbers, it's the men who died. Now, in 40 years period of time, there's a lot of bodies. 600,000 dead. Now, we have some people dying before the spies come on the scene. I've got listed down here 41 or 47,000 died before the spies came on the scene. And after the spies came on the scene, then it was, 40 years, and you're dead. When the spies came on the scene, Israel was pretty close, had lost some numbers, had dropped down from that 603,000 to approximately this, if not less. And that had to do with a plague that God was mad with them and wiped them out. Had to do with the Korah wiping them out. Had to do with the tribe of Reuben, 200, where the tribe of Reuben dropped radically because they were protesting against Moses, bambo, and they were dead. And there was a couple of plagues that come up. Even the 3,000 that were killed on the first year. So you have a large number of people dying. Now, what happened to them? They just kind of like stay in the desert? Or did they bury them? Huh? So we start talking about the actual physical numbers. It really is awesome, isn't it? Okay? It's not a matter of my personal speaking of what the amount is, but what He did to the numbers. What God did to the numbers. Now, let's go on. On the Levites, their total number of the Levites was 8,500. Oh, dropped it again, didn't I? In chapter 4, remember I told you the Levites were a little bit higher than that? Remember it was from birth, 12 months and up? Now we have another thing. What God does with the numbers. In Numbers chapter 4, it lists the three families. One of them had 3,200. Another had 2,630. Another one had 2,075 for a total of 8,500. I think it's 80. Yeah. Total. Total of what? Well, you go there from the age of 30 to the age of 50. Just the Levites. This is the working family. So when you see all the numbers, out of all those numbers, there was a certain number or a separation of the numbers to do a special function. And these numbers here are the ones who serve the tabernacle constantly. The rest of the Levites? No. The rest of the Levitical priesthood? No. Once you reach 50, you're out. And if you're 20, you don't get there until you're 30. Period. That's how God said it. So you get age of 30 is a very important date with God, or important time with God. Kind of reminds you of somebody else that was the age of 30 when you started? The Messiah, age of 30. They said about 30. I know. But God has a little interesting things about numbers. And we have to pay attention to what He does with them. He's not interested really in the count. He's interested in what... When you look at numbers, what He does with them. Now, whether or not, I spoke last week, I don't have to repeat myself from last week, whether it's just a handful or small amount down there, and it's a clan or it's a family, and these are the fighting men were a lot less, that is a controversy that's in Judaism. You don't have to accept it. You don't need to accept it. It just, to them, it makes sense. As I said last week, I also have Jewish commentaries that admit it doesn't make sense, but they don't like that idea, so they accept the 600,000 plus. So it's not really an issue that we should, you know, lose sleep over. But I just want you to know that as you read and research the book of Numbers, that word Aleph has a really difficult time always in their minds, and it does not necessarily tell us at all places that it refers to 1,000. Now go no place. I want to go to the book of, what time do we have? Almost, okay. The book of Judges. Book of Judges? Oh, yes. I want to go to the book of Judges. And we're in the 6th chapter. Now, remember I told you something else that the Aleph stood for? What did I say it stood for? Remember? Stands for the first letter of the alphabet, of course, number one. And it stands for, of course, 1,000. What else does it stand for?
A clan.
A clan. What else does it stand for?
An ox.
And what? Okay, now, believe it or not, there is a verb to this Aleph. And every time you talk about thousands, or you talk about clan, or you talk about family, or you talk about oxen, those are either adjectives, adverbs, or nouns, but Hebrew is based on what? Verb base. And when I told you last week what the verb base was? To learn. Now, it's very fascinating when we go through this thing, and in the book of Deuteronomy, we won't go there. Oh, maybe we will. I'll read it off. Deuteronomy 7th chapter, verse 13. And he, meaning God, will love thee and bless thee and multiply thee. He will also bless the fruit of thy womb and the fruit of thy land and thy corn and thy wine and thy olive oil and the increase of thy aleph and the flock of thy sheep and the land that which he swore unto to thy fathers to give them. He what? Increase the... This is the verb portion of it. He's going to increase the oxen. So the word learning does not mean I'm going to learn how to read and write. You're going to learn by the increasing. Something is happening. Something is increasing. And you will learn by the increasing of something. You learn by what's going on. God is a what kind of a person? A show and tell. I'm going to show you. I don't need to say anything else. I should tell you something, right? Remember the consolation out there? Psalms, what, 19? What is it? It's talking to you. Oh, look up there. Do you hear it? It says it doesn't speak with words, but it's talking to you. So you look at what has been created, and it will explain to you what it does. And so when we look at Book of Numbers, and we see all these numbers, we need to see what is happening to what God is doing with the numbers. Not what man is doing with the numbers, not with the controversy of if it was this number or that number. So we must learn something from God's numbering. Makes sense to you now? We have to learn something from the book of Numbers. What is the book of Numbers going to teach you? Oh, yeah, the wilderness. Oh, yeah, 40 years in the wilderness. Oh, yeah, the spies. Oh, yeah, that's what taught me. Why all the adding up of all these people? Why call them out? Why name certain names? What are they supposed to learn from all that? So the book of Numbers got a lot of us to listen to and pay attention to. We're not going to necessarily learn it all at once. Because that doesn't work with God. All right? Book of Judges, chapter 6. And every translator, including the complete Jewish Bible, couldn't do it. It didn't make sense, and so they couldn't do it. There are certain words where Aleph is there, and it doesn't make sense to translate it into thousand. It doesn't add up. Doesn't always work if you translate it into oxen. Doesn't always work. However, in the book of Judges, the sixth chapter, if you kind of look at it very carefully, what is the book of sixth chapter about? A guy named Gideon. Remember him? How many people did God finally say, use them to go to war? What was the number? 300. Boy, that's not very many, right? And, verse 15, and he said unto him, O my Lord, wherewith shall I save Israel? Behold, my family is poor in Manasseh, and I am the least in my father's house. Now they translated the word being family. Even the Jewish Publication Society couldn't put the word oxen there. They couldn't put the word thousand there. It didn't add up. It didn't make sense. Now, in a sense, it's a play on words. It's a play on words. Because the real word is word for oxen. My oxen is, and use the word poor. Now, you know, don't look at the thing like poverty stricken. They were poverty stricken. This Hebrew word for poor means they were weak, they were less than, they were smaller than. They didn't have the forces or the military strength or might to fight. That's what he was telling them. Not that he was poor, like we think of poverty in today, or I'm broke today, means weakness in strength. So his oxen was weak in strength, to play in word. What does oxen always refer to? What's the main purpose of an ox, by the way, in biblical? Strength, okay. But what does the ox do? It what? It plows. What else does it do? They are more than a horse. They are a work animal that really works. And works hard. A muscle-bound animal. And it's always a male, not a female. And it's very strong, very powerful. And it carries tremendous amount of load. When you carry two ox to haul, you could get to carry an awful lot. So what he's doing is a play on words using the word oxen. I don't have, my ox is not that strong. My oxen is not that powerful. I can't do it. And of course, God saw the problem and gave him 300 men. Now you have enough. Now your ox is strong enough. So we have a play on words when you use this word, the book of Judges. Just trying to explain some words, how they come about. This is a side note. When Israel was being brought out of Egypt, there were only two tribes that were mentioned to be the leadership. And those two tribes were Reuben and Simeon. All the rest were not mentioned. They were the primary ones that helped lead the people out of Israel, out of Egypt. Remember that? Now, Book of Chronicles, first chapter, First Chronicles, chapter 50, chapter 5. I find this very, very fascinating. Reuben lost 250 people when they went against Moses. The numbers dropped. Men. Now, Chronicles is kind of fascinating. And I only want to bring this up because I think it's very fascinating here. Here's where Aleph makes sense again, in the sense that it could refer to what we think of a thousand. And the reason is because it's a historical point here. Ezra wrote this out as a historical point of something. Let's go here. Verse 1 of chapter 5. Now the sons of Reuben, the firstborn of Israel, for he is the firstborn, but, so I said, he has defiled his father's bed, and birthright went unto, of course, Joseph and his sons. And so on and so forth. And he says that Judah did not get the right to have the birthright. Jews do not have the birthright. Only Joseph has a birthright. It's never been changed. And this is during Ezra's time, and only Jews returned back to the land. Drop down to verse 18. I think it's very fascinating. There are three, remember? Reuben, Gad, and half the tribe of Manasseh were where? On the other side of the Jordan. Now, how big did they become? I find this fascinating. Valiant men, able to bear buckler, sword, and shoot with bow, and skill in war, were 44,760 from all three of the tribes. So not all of them went to war. Just a small amount. The total number would have been over 100,000. But they didn't. So not everybody goes to war. Just a certain selected few that God has, and very skilled warriors. This is before the kingship. Before there was King David. All right? And verse 21, it talks about they will take 50,000 sheep, 250,000 donkeys, and 200,000 men they actually captured, so on and so forth. Let's continue on. This is fascinating here in this chapter. Verse 22, listen. For they fell down, many slain, because of war that of God Almighty, and they dwelt their steads, or in that land, until a point in time. When did they no longer live there? When was the captivity? Wait a minute, we're talking kings later. Many, many years later, under Isaiah, remember? Hezekiah, that's when the northern kingdom was taken away into captivity. He's only talking about Reuben, Gad, and Manasseh. And they ruled all the way to the Euphrates River, rather. They owned that territory all the way, just as God promised Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, to that river be yours. And it was theirs. Yes.
A.D. B.C.
You're doubting.
That brings it all a lot further forward than.
Yes. I just found it fascinating. So when you look at the numbers there that's listed in chapter 20, the previous verse 21, he's not talking about all at once. He's talking about from that time conquering those people from the River Jordan all the way to Euphrates River. And that's how much they captured in that period of time, from the time they stayed there until captivity. Now, all of a sudden, the number gets small. That many years, right? It's a continual process. That's how they captured. Okay. Why would they capture men for? Put them in bondage. Put them in slavery. Make them subjected to themselves. I mean, people to people, right? And they ruled all the way to Euphrates River. I find that very, very fascinating. It says there in verse 18, the sons of Reuben, Gad, and half of Manasseh dwelt. Oh, wait a minute. Oh, it says, and verse 10. Oh, it says, and they dwelt in the tents throughout all the land of the Gilead, the Hagars. Remember Hagars? Remember who Hagar was? Abraham's second wife, and all her kids were eastward. They weren't down in Egypt. They weren't in Africa. They were east of Jordan River. That's where she went, and that's where her family went. Yes?
Would they be turned loose at the year Jubilee if they were slaves of all that?
No. Only the that was only given to the people of the house of Israel, not to a Gentile, unless they became part of the house of Israel. If they so wanted to join and be part of the house of Israel, then yes. But if they didn't want to be, they didn't get the privilege. Simple as that. All right, so my subject matter today is to say, okay, so now what? We see something a little bit different here in the book of Judges, 8th chapter. Don't need to go there. Where in that poem, there was 40,000 people, or 40,000 from three tribes, the lot that Deborah had, his three tribes. That same number, okay, and the book of Numbers lists 1,560 as a men of war. But once again, not all men went to war. Only a handful that went to war. Not everybody at the age of 20 and up went to war. A selected few. So when they have a controversy in Judaism, this is my personal opinion, my rigid personal opinion, they try to compare the mass that was in Numbers to what really happened in warfare. And God said, 1,000 from each tribe will go to war. Okay, is there a conflict? Perhaps there is, perhaps there isn't. I'm only bringing you this input so that you would be aware as we go through Book of Numbers, and you're going to read an awful lot of articles, you're going to hear somebody talk about it, you're probably going to hear your, when you go to listen to different people on the Torah study, they're going to mention these things, they're going to have this statement and that statement. I just want you to be aware of it. It's not that I am right or wrong. I don't care to be right or wrong about the thing, to tell you the honest truth. I just want you to be informed. Because it's increasing more and more throughout Messianic movements. Both Jewish Messianic movements and the Israeli Messianic movements, I guess you want to call it. From the house of Ephraim is a movement and the house of Judah the movement. You know, be aware of these things. What I recommend you highly, don't argue about it. Just let them have their thought. One of the most beautiful things I hope that I've been able to do, and all the time I've been here, is that when I present something to you, it's just, now you don't have to believe it, but research it, look at it, and find out, and make a decision. Think about it. You don't even have to think very hard. If you don't want to think about it, then don't think about it, all right? I'm not out there for you to come and think like I think. I'm a very, very strong person that believes that you are well-educated. You're well able to be well-educated, and you can make your own decisions. But must we bicker amongst ourselves? No. It doesn't matter, does it? As we go through the book of Numbers, what I'm going to try to show you, if I can, God willing, is showing you what God does with the numbers. And how those, what God does with the numbers, we will learn for what the Apostle Paul said. They were written for our admonition, our understanding, for our instruction. So we're going to try our very best and beseech the eternal creator of heaven and earth. What is it that you are trying to show us? You presented it to us, show and tell. I have to go and look. What have you done? If you've done it then, are you doing it now? Why would he stop? If that is his pattern, why would he stop? Any questions?
Did Christ say, Richard, that there will be few that I will find when I return?
There are few that I will bind?
Find. Oh. There'll be few. There won't be very many.
Oh, yeah. I'm talking about the way of life. Or the broad way and the narrow way. Right. I feel to have a great deal. That has to do with the big names that are written in the Tanakh, especially in the Torah section. Those are the men and women that found it, and it was not a piece of cake for them. They worked hard. They sacrificed a lot. Yes.
I think it's good to note that the controversy isn't that widespread. It's widely unaccepted that Aleph means less than 1,000.
Well, I understand that, but what I'm saying is that I want us to be aware of it. All right, that's all, because you're going to run into that. I don't want you to argue with somebody. Just say, okay. Don't get into the stupid. What the Apostle Paul said something. You read it last week. With genealogy, stop it. It has no value. And this, what the problem here is, that when you go back to Numbers, they're going to be worried about the numbers and the genealogy and the numbers, how they work. And Apostle Paul says, don't waste your time. Don't waste your time. Let them believe what they want to believe.
More thing. Also, the witness to the Torah, the oral tradition, also maintains that Aleph means 1,000 in those verses.
Right, yeah. But that's the written Torah. Now, that was written many, many years after the birth of Christ. Okay. And death of Christ.
Family. We all have stories of our family. Yeah. We believe those reports.
Right, yeah.
I'm not saying that they're gospel. I'm just saying that we have witness...
I only what I think, what I really believe, I try to think, what is written here. I do my very best to stay away from biblical theology, even from Judaism and Christianity, and even from people who talk on radio or this. If they've got their theory, fine, tell me your theory, period, point blank. But don't tell me that it's canonized. Jeff. I gotta go.
Well, yeah. As long as we're talking about, you know, how it's actually written, you know, you brought up a great point in the part there in Chronicles where, you know, it's seen to be at that point referring to thousands. The challenge, though, is when you actually look at the number itself in Hebrew, you know, it's very helpful to actually look at how the numbers are constructed. The numbers as they're constructed are the same way as they are in numbers.
Right, same way.
Exactly the same.
So you can't.
Pattern.
What I'm saying is that
the numbers are constructed in a certain fashion. You know, number.
Correct. There's a reason behind it all.
Tens of numbers, right. And Aleph, and a number, and then tens of numbers,
right.
And.
Right.
Moet, yes. Which is hundreds, and a certain number, and tens.
Right.
And that you add all that together, and that's a number.
Right.
So the same construction that you see in Chronicles is the same construction that you see in Numbers and in Exodus.
Okay. So can we get into the subject matter? Adele?
I have not found so much the controversy to be whether the Aleph meant 1,000 or not. I find the controversy is that if you take that throughout the text to mean 1,000, then if you go back and with the other texts and take the people and take what happened and add it up, that it doesn't work. So then you've got a controversy. Why can't this work according to the other text if you make it mean 1,000? The argument is not whether it means 1,000, unless somebody comes up and says, wait a minute, this is how many years you've got, this is the situation. That's when the controversy comes about. And a lot of times they've said, we don't know.
That's sometimes you're very safe saying that.
But there is a problem doing it that way.
Only if we deny that the same person who did that, you know, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. You know, if you deny one, then you can deny the other one easily.
Oh, no. They both believe that the text is correct. But there is a problem that they, modern day translation, because they are looking at it and saying, wait, there it's one of the great contradictions in the Bible, because the Bible says this number, yet that number is impossible to come up with. So they say, well, we don't know, it's a contradiction.
Okay.
Well,
but
there is an answer there, but it depends on how you look at it, what the answer is.
In the book of Numbers, the ratio between the age of 20 to upward that's listed there of the house of Israel and the number of firstborn is ratio 1 to 27. That's a huge separation. And that's a controversy. Now, once again, I am not going to expound on a lot of things because I don't care about that. I just want to go and say, what is it that God does with this? I went to the book of Exodus and remember going through those things, going through the trips all the way to the Mount Sinai. God put them there. God did it. God sent them there. He did this. Isn't that they were wandering and going nowhere? In the book of Numbers, they list over 40 places they stopped. Now, they didn't stop haphazardly. They stopped where God said for them to stop. Because they only moved when? When that cloud moved. So every place they ever stopped is when that cloud stopped. And we'll get to that a little later, but that's, I just want to get the Aleph thing down so that if you ever hear a lot of controversy about it, especially from Jewish people, and if you accept the other way, I am not going to say you're dumb, because I can't tell you that, because I don't know. I really don't have a complete answer. I can think I have an answer. I can hope I have an answer. I can hope I can clarify it. But, you know, there's some things in the Bible, I will be honest with you, when someone asks me something, I says, I don't know.